Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody's got the fever. This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care.
And you know I care about everybody out there. Welcome to Lenny Godfrey Straight, No Chaser. Good evening, everyone. And boy, do we have a wonderful conversation this evening with one of my really good friends that I've known for a long while. But before we get to this guest tonight, let me do a little bit of the housekeeping as I usually do so that all those who are tuning in for the first time, those of you who are in China, thank you very much. Those of you who are in London and you've written me letters, thank you so very much. Los Angeles and Texas, New Jersey, everyone, thank you so very much for letting me know that you listen weekly, that you have your little cocktail. It's your cocktail hour. Thank you. I'm so glad that to be of service, and hopefully you've learned a whole lot about the arts and how it's influenced so many different kinds of people in our society. Here during this pandemic, you know, we've had a chance to really talk to people when they haven't been right on the run. It's beginning to open up, and I'm still catching people like tonight, this great guest that I have. Still catching them while they're not really, really, really busy. And I'm so very fortunate to have this. But let me reiterate and tell you that you're on blogtalkradio.com/ S as in Sam, T as in Tom, H as in Harry, and the number 2. And then you will dial 1-516-453-6063 if you want to listen, or and if you want to ask a question, dial that same number and then just press the number 1. We have been having a great time. This is episode 30. You know, we're going to go a little bit until some of the holidays, and then we're going to take a holiday break. But I am having the best time, and thank you all for listening all this time. So now, let me introduce to you my good friend, Bathsheba Monk. Bathsheba is the author of 7 novels. 2 of the books are about artists, and the creator of the very popular Swanson Herbinko mystery series, and we're going to talk about that, which is being adapted for television. So maybe I have an opportunity to be in one of these mysteries and kill somebody. You never know. Her novel, Nude Walker, about soldiers returning from Afghanistan, has been optioned by Fountain Films for a feature film, and you know that's very, very, very prominent in our news these days. So, and thank you, everyone's calling in. Thank you very much. Come on in, and if you know, you're welcome to listen. If you have a question, please pose your question a little bit later in the program. And then she is the owner of Blue Heron Bookworks, which I know very well because she published my book, which specializes in memoirs by extraordinary people, anthologies, and series fiction. Well, with all of that and being a very hyphenated, she didn't mention the fact that she's a playwright, you know, because I know because I directed one of her plays. And so we're going to talk about that too. But welcome, 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 my friend Bathsheba Monk. Hello.
Hi, Lenny. Thanks for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. I've really, really been looking forward to this. You and I met at the home of the guest that's coming on next week, Bruce Boyer. Do you remember that?
Uh-huh. I do remember that.
Yes, yes.
You were very dramatic. You swept in with your furs and your voice.
Well, and you know, and it was really lovely because it was the way that Bruce had put this party together, he and Pam, to allow me to be introduced to people who are in the arts in the Lehigh Valley, and all of you were there. I mean, it was really, I remember that was the evening I met Dave Roper, who I'd heard so much about and who I had an opportunity to work with, but he had not worked with a vocal person all his career. And I said, well, I'm looking for somebody to play the piano, but, you know, I know that you don't, you know, play. He said, oh, I'll play for you. I went,
I know. Oh, he's so good. You guys are so good together.
Yeah, it was really wonderful.
So
God bless him. You know, he's gone on, but it was a wonderful experience. He was so talented, you know, and knew so much about it. But and then that's when I met you. And I had heard so much about you. First, because of the name Bathsheba, which no one has a lot of. It's a beautiful name. And I thought, oh, I have to, Bathsheba Monk, I have to meet this person. This is a very interesting thing. And then, you know, then they said, oh, no, she's a writer. And she publishes and everything. And I thought, well, this is really going to be very interesting. And there you were at the party. I tell you, it was good. And we hit it off pretty well. It was pretty good.
We did. We did. Yes.
Yeah.
And so, as soon as I talked to you, I said, there's a book in that woman. Okay.
I know. You know what? I'm going to say this to you now. You are the only person, I think, that could have convinced me to write a book, because I kept on saying I'm not a writer and I can't write. So I've written one, and I'm now on part two. So maybe in the next year or two here, we'll get back together and do another book, which will be a lot of fun.
Yay.
But God knows a lot has happened since the first book. It's been more than 5 years. So now it's time to really catch up on all the things that have happened. But now I want to start with you, and I want you to tell me how it all began. You are a native of Pennsylvania, are you not? Or did I get that?
Yes. No, I was born in Bethlehem. I love to say that. I was born in Bethlehem. And I swore I would leave as soon as I could, which I did. I was 17 when I graduated high school, and I left for the Army right away. And I got to Germany, and and I got my education in the Army, and I stayed in Europe. So I was in Europe for like 6 years, and then I decided, I knew I was an artist of some sort, but I didn't know what. I started painting. And so I got a scholarship to the School of the Museum of Fine Arts in Boston. And so I landed up in Boston for about 15 years. And, I was very lucky.
Boston.
And I got my MFA in Boston.
You're going real fast, because I want to stop. First of all, I want to go back a little bit. Let's go back to Bethlehem. And you said you would always leave it as soon as you could. But talk to me about the childhood. Was in your childhood, were there any moments when you had an inkling that you would be that involved, this involved with the arts as much as you are now?
I think I always knew it. I was always writing. I was always drawing. I was drawing over everything. And I thought it was a very good sign. I got kicked out of art class. So,
why did you get kicked out of art class?
I know who gets kicked out of art class, right?
I don't know. What happened? What did you do? What did you do?
the thing was, we were doing paper mache. This was in junior high school or middle school, and the art teacher said we were supposed to do a sports thing, you know. So I did a basketball player, but my vision of a basketball player was very long, thin guy with a head. That's what I did.
And she
told me it was awful, and she banished me to home ec. And
oh my God.
So,
really?
I know. Is that funny? I know. I thought it was very funny. And so I got kicked out of home ec too for cutting up, but that's another story.
I
finally did manage to get out of school though. Yeah, but I wrote for the newspaper the whole time. I was always writing. And I figured I would be a journalist, actually. I never thought I would be a fiction writer. It never even occurred to me, you know, for the longest time, because I thought it was lying in a way. And so, somebody told me you should be writing fiction. You should be writing about your childhood. It was so interesting the way you tell these stories. And I said, I can't do it because I think it's lying. And it really took me a while to get over that I could put something down that was true in essence, if not necessarily the facts, you know, the facts attached to it. So so I went into the Army, and the Army was very funny because once they found out that I did have some talent for drawing and for writing, they put me doing that stuff, even though that wasn't my job. So I was doing a lot of publicity and doing posters and that kind of thing. So it wasn't really hardship for me, you know, to be there. It wasn't, wasn't in combat.
That was Germany?
So Germany. Yes, Heidelberg.
Yes. So how was it being in Germany, being an American, was it difficult? Was the cultural differences really massive, or at that point in time, or, you know, have we Americanized everybody so that, you know, there wasn't any difference?
At that time, okay, figure that was like the late 70s, early 80s, and that was not, it was still very old Europe in a lot of ways. But I was kind of lucky because, you know, this is a German area, you know, the Lehigh Valley where we live.
Yes.
And
yes.
And I never, and we had an option to learn languages in high school. And so I took German. I didn't think it was odd because everybody around here spoke German. And
right.
So I spoke German and French by the time I got there. And so in a way I kind of had an advantage. But the Army actually did do a very good job. They had an acculturation program. You went in, and we had this person, oddly enough, you'll know, I forget his name, we call him Herr Trope. He taught the class, but he was actually the voice of Boris in Rocky the Flying Squirrel.
Animation. Yes, yes.
Yes.
Oh, Boris. And that's not Morticia. Boris and, what was her name? Oh, I can't remember.
Natasha. Natasha, isn't that funny? So he taught us everything about, you know, like what kind of, if you were invited to a German family, what color flowers you should bring, how many, because it all meant something, you know, different. And so it was really stuff like that. And the Germans are very interesting people, but, you know, after a while I was very glad. And I traveled extensively there. They had Eurail passes, you know what those are. And so I just traveled all over the place, and I really got to know Europe very well. And then I was ready to come home and go back to school.
So you came back home and went back up to Boston?
I went to Boston because I applied to art schools and they gave me a scholarship. So I said, okay, I'll go there.
Well, I've got to ask you now, and I probably will get to it. Did your time in the service influence the book the novel that you wrote? You know, Nude Walker.
It did in retrospect, but I wasn't writing it then. I was writing my first book there. Now You See It, Stories from Cokesville.
Yes.
Because, yes, and because those were all like remembered stories of my childhood, really. It was how I remembered this area. So I wasn't here when I was writing it. And it was when I was starting my second novel that my agent said, you got to cash in on your military experience. You know, you got to cash in artistically. You got to bring it to the fore because everybody wants to know about that. And so even though I wasn't in Afghanistan, I did do a lot of research. And, you know, being in the military is kind of the same no matter when you're in it. So I did have that, you know, that was really my background for getting into that. So
I see. Well, you know, but what's really interesting is, you know, the time that you spent away from the country. That year, I remember being away a little bit after college. I was away during the bicentennial. I was in Amsterdam. And it really does not change you, but it gives you another perspective about how we live here. Did it do that for you?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, the thing is, you know, we always hear like America's number one. Well, you never hear anybody saying like Germany, we're number two. They all think they're number one. We all, and you know, and that's how they live their lives, as if they are the center of the universe. And it was very, not humbling, but it was an eye-opener. And it was also an eye-opener to hear people talk to me rather frankly about how they viewed Americans.
Yes.
So, yes, it really did. And I think maybe it really helped me as an artist because it got me to sort of detach from my ego a little bit to see myself in the culture, you know, not just like not in the middle of it, but I could detach and see myself in it, which I think is a good skill for an artist to have.
Oh, I think so. I think travel is essential because it opens you up to a lot of different cultures and choices and observances. And I found when I was in Europe, when people are comfortable with you, because they're not going to, I didn't find them to be rude enough to criticize America in general. But once they got comfortable, then they would say, well, you know, That's the thing. I don't understand this about America. Explain this to me. And it would come out of that conversation about some of the things that we have here, the traditions that we have here, the attitudes that we have when we come to Europe, how sometimes we're not as personable as we could be when we are in someone else's country. And we expect them to acquiesce to our culture in America, where we should acquiesce to theirs. So it was a very interesting experience, and that really, spending that time there, spending the time that I had there, when I came back to America, it was humbling for me because I did see that there was an arrogance that I didn't want to be a part of. That, let me just put it like that. You know, I didn't want to be a part of. I wanted to be far more welcoming and all of that. So now I've got you in Boston, and you're on scholarship, and you're on art scholarship. So what is life like there now?
Well, you know, Boston is a very good place to be a young person.
like New York, Yeah,
exactly. It's a city, a lot of young people, lots of life and nightlife and just things are happening. And I stayed there. I mean, I got my BA when I was in Europe from the University of Maryland over there. So I was really just working on my master's, and I only stayed for like a year and a half in the school. And I decided, you know, I had to get a job because I was going to stay there. So I did. And I worked at a big insurance company, and oddly enough, you know, the way I sold myself, I mean, people think that artists can't do anything else, and that's why they do it. And but I find artists can do anything. And in fact, I was running the real estate office out of Blue Cross and Blue Shield in Massachusetts. And the way I sold myself with this job is I said, I can conceive of a painting and I can execute it, and then I can sell it. I said, there's nothing I can't do. And so based on that flimsy evidence, they hired me.
You know, we have that in common, because it's so, one of the jobs that I had when I would do temporary work, and you know, everybody says, Lindy, you did temp? I said, yes. You know, I mean, you sit around, and in between jobs, I, you know, after I go to class and everything, then I want to do something. I work for Blue Cross Blue Shield in Manhattan.
Oh, no kidding.
in their headquarters. And I ran their employment division. They, you know, they turned all of their responsibilities over after about, you know, because as an actor, you know how to command the room. So I just said, you know, after being there for a few days, they said, well, do you mind? We want you to do thus and thus and thus. And so I said, well, that's not a problem. I can do that. And it's greeting the people, telling them to fill out the applications, telling them what they have to do. So we have that in common. See, I told you these conversations bring out things you never even And those are great memories. That was really a lot of fun. It was right before I was to go out on the road and then come back and do the showcase that got me to Broadway. I mean, it was just about 6 weeks, and then boom, 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 boom. I was in rehearsal for Broadway. It was so funny, you know. But it was very funny.
Well, you know, I think so much that the people, you know, the first thing that goes is the arts in school budgets,
yes,
and I think
exactly.
That's a crime chain.
Yeah.
And
I do. My
evidence for this is like the Parkland, you know, those high schoolers, when the shooter came in and the kids that came out of there radicalized, they were all acting students.
Yes.
And
they were in tune to their feelings. That's why, you know.
Yes.
And that's something that, you know, I think all of the students should be required to take at least an acting one class, because it does put you in touch with yourself. You know, and then you go on. You don't have to, you know, the sensitivities that we have to acquire in order to be able to transform into other people and to really interpret songs and all that other stuff. You don't have to experience that, but it does give you that sensitivity about what we're doing and an appreciation about what we're doing. And it does let us people know that we're not disposable. You know, the arts are not disposable.
Right.
You know,
they're essential.
I absolutely agree with that. They're in math, they're in science, it's everywhere. But it's just traditionally, every single time that there is something that, you know, that has to go, the first thing is, oh, I'll hear, well, it's not in the budget, we can't do this program this year. You can't, you know, the children can't have a chorus because it's not in the budget, we can't afford to have the maintenance, we can't have the da 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 da. It's so sad because
it
I had
sad.
That. Yes, I had all of that when I was in school. The extracurricular activities were really very important. Now it's probably more sports, but it's not arts. It's not the arts. The arts were very important.
No. And art and music especially is tied to math
exactly.
ability. I just can't believe that they get rid of it. Flash forward when I'm teaching, you know, freshmen in college, like years later, and they're like, we don't know why we have to do writing and why we have to read world literature. And it's like, you know, someday you're going to be alone, you know, maybe just for a week, and you got to be alone with yourself. And when you have the humanities and you have art and you can appreciate it, even if you don't do it, but I'm sure everybody can do something, you know, it's what keeps you alive. It's what keeps you going when you do face yourself. So I feel very strongly. Can you tell?
Oh, yes. Well, you know, we both do. Well, that's why I'm doing this. You know,
right.
I find that it's just so very important to advocate for the arts, because people just kind of take it for granted that it'll always be there. And it's not so. It won't. Without support and without consistency of people being aware of how important it is. People talk about now the theater that is trying to, you know, trying to get back on board, and the absence of it and what it did for everybody and how excited we are to get back. You know, it's a little dangerous thus far. You know, a lot of people have to be very conscientious about going to the theater and making sure that they're in line with all of the requirements that they have. But the experience is, you know, what they've been missing. And until it was taken away, they just everybody took it for granted, you know?
Yes.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. It's amazing. So now we're getting, because you know, you and I can go on about the arts forever. You know that, right?
I know that.
So, but I really still want to talk about, all right, so you, the Boston experience, it's a city for young people. You stayed there, you said 15 years?
15 years, yeah. And while I was there, I was actually painting. I was doing very large figures, like, you know, like 6 feet by 5 feet canvases. And at one point I had this idea for a movie based on the figure that I was painting. And I asked everybody, how do you write a screenplay? How do you write a screenplay? And they said, well, Emerson College is like right across the street from you, because I was living right in town. And they said, why don't you take a course? And they didn't have screenwriting then. That wasn't so popular then. It was playwriting. And so I did take a playwriting class, and I finished it was actually a script, though. It was for a movie. And and then everybody said, you know, like, why are you painting? I think you have more talent as a writer. And it was true. And I was also faster. And, you know, you can't dawdle if you're going to be a success in the arts. You have to produce stuff, you know, you have to keep going. Mm-hmm. And so it was easier for me to write. And actually, I enjoy it more, although I do miss painting every now and then. But I dream about painting, actually. But
so you know, because I don't know this. Here is another thing I don't know about you. Okay. So you don't have a studio? Is there something we need to work on about getting you a studio so that you can do some paintings and stuff, you know, in this phase of life?
If I had some time, probably, yes.
I
would do that.
I
would take a tap dancing too then, okay?
Yeah, I know, right? I want to go to lessons again.
Right.
There's so much. I think once you get into the arts, though, there's so much of it that you do experience. I was talking in one episode, I was talking to someone, and we were talking about the people of visible people who are singers, actors, but also they're visual artists. They're interior design.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just spreads. You want to do so much more. You see so many different other sections of the arts that you want to get involved in. And you know, I'm a perfect example. Here I am in broadcasting, but you know, I make my bread and butter singing and dancing and directing, you know, on television and
uh-huh.
film and on the stage. So you do want to, it's a challenging, that's another thing about it. There's so many different facets of it, you know, that
uh-huh.
when talk about art, they think about museums and they think
right.
about painting, but they don't think about the art of cuisine. I'm going to have a chef on at the end of the season talking about the art.
Oh, fabulous.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it's just one of those things where, you know, people don't realize choreography is an art form, and the calligraphy of recording it is an art form that people don't realize.
Yes.
So many things that come out of it. But now, so what got you, what brought you out of Boston, and did you come straight back here, or where did you go?
Well, so I was in Boston for, you know, like 15 years, like I said, and I got my MFA, and then I started, you know, working on my short stories, which you're supposed to do, you know, get your collection of short stories together. And then I met my husband, Paul. I met him at a party, actually in New Jersey. and he told me he was a New Yorker, which was true, but I said I could fall in love with a New Yorker, but he was a New Yorker who lived in my hometown, which I swore I'd never come back to. So anyway, so here I am again in Bethlehem. And this is something, you know, that I think a lot of budding artists don't know, and they should really be aware of it. And, you know, networking and who you know is a big part of it. You like to think that you get where you are because you're so great, and you do have to have stuff to back it up. There's no question. You do have to be, you know, on your game and on top of it. But it wasn't really until Paul, who had New York connections, he said, you need an agent. And so he was in an entirely different business, and he just called up people, and within 2 days, I had an agent.
Wow.
And then after that, within a week, I had a contract with, you know, Farrar, Straus & Giroux, which is a big publishing company for fiction, especially. It's like, you know, I started out at the top. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, so that was, like, fabulous. But the point is, I was sending out these stories over the transom, as they used to call it, and nobody was responding.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and now all of a sudden, you know, the New Yorker's calling me up, the fiction editor, you know, let's talk about this story, blah, blah, blah. So it really, you know, I really do think that, you know, that people who want to be successful in the art really do have to pay attention to their contacts and keeping up with people that you meet in the arts, because, you know, you're going to see them again somewhere. You're going to need them.
You are. You know, it's a very, you bring up an extraordinary point about being a professional in this industry, any kind of professional. It is necessary that you do find out what your environment is. You don't have to go to every party or be, you know, at the opening of an envelope, but you should be knowledgeable about what elements of the section that you're in, what elements are important for you to know, what people are important for you to know. I remember when I first started acting, casting people and kind agents, because we would freelance them before we would sign to one agent. And agents would say to me, you know, the feedback that you get is really great. You should start an index collection so that, you know, after each audition, you write down who you saw, what the reaction was. So when they call you in again, you can recall to them, yes, I saw you for the so-and-so and so-and-so show. And da-da-da. It was magical. I would come in and go, yes, I remember we had this, you know, you were doing this fabulous show. Da-da-da. No, you didn't hire me, but it, you know, but I did come and see it, but I would have been fabulous in it.
But those too bad things, you.
Yes, exactly. I said, now you have me back. You should have hired me. You know, it's that kind of personable kind of relationship that really got me, so that I didn't audition as much as a lot of my friends. The phone would just ring from people asking me to come back again and again. You develop personal relationships, and they were long standing relationships, longevity. You know, work for somebody for, you know, they call you up for 15 years running, you know, we're doing something else this season, because you have time, and then they book you in that. So those kinds of things are what you want to be as a working artist. Yeah, you're absolutely right.
And you have to be a nice person too, because if given a choice between somebody who's hard to work with and somebody who's not, you know, I mean, it just, who would you rather work with?
It came true even more. It came true even more when I was in Los Angeles, because I remember being in a production and they were casting something else, and listening to the casting session. I was in on it. I was privileged to be in on it. And the conversation was, I was just listening. I wasn't going to add anything. The conversation was, well, you know, this person is very, very talented, but, you know, you want somebody who's going to, you know, if you're going to be filming until 1 or 2 o'clock in the morning, you want somebody who's going to make you laugh, not somebody who's going to sit in the corner and pout and, you know, and be in bad humor.
Right.
I'd rather get the less talented person and know that I can get them to where I want to get than to get the very talented person, but if they're going to be difficult, don't want them. And difficulty is not being concerned about your work, not being, you know, pristine about the causes of what your character is. Difficult is just not being a considerate person about the people around you. And if someone is not feeling well, calling them up to make sure that they're okay. All of it, just being a considerate person, that's difficult. You know, when you don't do that, that's what difficult is. This other stuff, when people say, oh, that person is difficult, usually it means that they have a high standard of work. And you know, they're making you get up off your behind and work as hard also. So
Right.
So I think Paul was absolutely, hello, Paul. I think he was, I think he's absolutely correct in hooking you up like that and making you aware of what is happening in the business. But that was your mystery series, or is that the mystery series that?
No, that was Now You See It, Stories from Cokesville.
Okay,
and
that
was my first book out of the blocks, and that had a lot of great reviews. It was a Chicago Tribune best book of the year, so I was very proud of that. Mm-hmm. And it just got a lot of play, you know, it was good. And then The Nude Walker came out 5 years later. And then, you know, after that, I was kind of like, It was a little dry. The well was dry.
Now, before we do that, those books are still available, though. So people, you know, because there may be people who were saying, well, no, I'd like to be able to sample this book. Is it sampling on Amazon or someplace where they can?
Yes, you can go on Amazon. I think it's like a look inside thing. Now You See It, Stories from Cokesville, PA. And the other one is Nude Walker.
Nude. N-U-D is it? And dog E, Nude Walker. Yes.
Right.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So that was my commercial. That's as much commercial as I do on here. But I really try to, you know, if there's art, if there's someone has visual art that they want people to see, if they have artistic pieces or, you know, I want to encourage the audience to, especially if it's something that you can do online, because we have people who are listening from all over the places. So that they can go and be exposed to a lot of different people, not just the people who are always in their faces. So, all right.
Right.
All right. So now we've got you. Nude Walker came second. And then what happened?
So then I said, you know, I just wanted to, well, first of all, you know, being a writer is pretty solitary endeavor. And so, I was looking around to see if there were any writing conferences that I could, you know, take part in or something. And there was really not that much in the Valley at that time. So I partnered with SteelStacks, with Jeff Parks at SteelStacks. And we put on a memoir writing conference. And it was very successful. We had it was the first conference of its kind in the Lehigh Valley. And we had like 11 presenters. It was 2 days. It was fabulous. And at the end of these conferences, the participants usually like to have like a book, an e-book or something to cut, you know, like from a little piece from all the participants, and which we did. And one of the people who was there was Larry Neff, and he was an ex-steel worker. And he said he didn't want to contribute to the book because he was writing a book about his time in the steel company. And I said, okay, fine. And I really forgot about it. And a couple months later, he presents me with a manuscript, and I was completely bowled over because, you know, I didn't expect anything of that quality. I don't know why, but I didn't.
Go ahead.
But let me put it this way. It was polished to a, you know, where I haven't even seen students, you know, who are studying writing have that much polish
that
to their stuff.
And,
yeah. So I was bowled over and I said, so what do you want me to do with it? And he said, I want you to publish it. And I said, well, I'm not a publisher. And he said, well, you better figure out how to do it. And you better figure out how to do it in print because my audience is over 60 and they're not going to read a, you know, Kindle book or online.
Right.
And so me and his girlfriend, Jane Gill, she was a librarian, we got our heads together and we figured out how to do it and we did it. And it was a huge success. It's still selling. That was like the first book out of the blocks, and it's still selling. It's down at the Industrial History Museum. They sell it down there. They sell it in downtown Bethlehem.
And it's about steel workers. It's about, tell me what it's about.
It's called Rigger. He was a rigger. He was one of these guys who go up over the, you know, like thousands of, you know, those blast furnaces down there. Well, he climbed them.
That's what he did
to repair them. So he's one of those guys. And so in the meantime, then I'm figuring out, okay, I'm a publisher now. And somebody told me that mystery books, if you do them on ebooks, sell really well. And so I started writing them. So I did like three, and then I hired somebody to write the fourth one. And he kind of surprised me because when I opened this book, it was Joe Talarowski. He wrote Dead Stick. They're all called Dead. Dead Wrong, Dead Karma, Dead Silence, Dead Stick, Dead Heat. And anyway, it was so mind-blowing because I opened this manuscript and he wouldn't let me see it when he was writing it. And then I opened it up and it sounded like me.
Wow.
How can you do this? And you should probably be out in Hollywood writing scripts, you know, or something, if you can do that. So anyway, so that was kind of the fuel. And then we that was starting, you know, that then I started to put those out in print, and other people found me. I put out something on one of these listservs on Yahoo, and I got some very good, really quality writers, Jim McGarra and Vince Franconi. They're both college professors, and you know, they were my next ones out, and we actually published a book of Paul's writing. And I have to tell you, this is how writers fall in love. Okay, I didn't know if I could fall in love with Paul until, and then he gave me something to read, which was a journal he kept when he was taking care of his mother who had Alzheimer's. And this was an acid test for me, because when I was in school in Boston, I was working part-time when I was in school in a nursing home which had Alzheimer's patients. And so I said, if this is going to be some treacly thing, you know,
right.
I know he's not honest. And so, you know what I mean? And so it was so beautifully written, and it was so honest about how you feel, you know, when you see somebody you love, and it's not all sad.
Yeah.
Sometimes you're angry. And I mean, all the emotions were like right there, and they were said in such a real way. I said, okay, I could love this guy. So anyway, so he was another one out of the block. And so we were off to the races with this. And then we started getting people like you coming on board, you know, some really unusual stories, your time in show business and the lessons learned, sharing, you know, seeking the spotlight. And so it's been a real ride. And now we have some fabulous, fabulous books coming out. Can I tell you about some of them?
Sure. Well, yeah.
Okay. We just recently published this book, Fuad Hamdi, 21st Century. And Fuad Hamdi is an Iraqi artist. And he's just fabulous. And I would really suggest that people just pick up this book, Fuad Hamdi, 21st Century. And I actually wrote the text, but it's mostly his reproductions of his paintings. But he came to me in a sort of circuitous route. He left Iraq when America invaded. And then he went to Syria, as a lot of Iraqis did. And then they started their civil war. He went to Turkey, and finally he's in Canada. And he's in his 50s, and he really wants to get a toehold in the United States. So I'm helping him with that, and one of the ways I'm helping him was doing this book. And he's just fabulous. It's like east meets west, you know. And you can see the progression he makes as he goes from culture to culture. As he goes from Iraq, which is very abstract, and then as he comes finally to Canada, where all of a sudden the colors are just in full bloom, and the figures, and it's surreal, and it's just wonderful. And anyway, so that's one of my favorite books right now. And also Vince Franconi, who I told you was one of the first authors we had, he just put together a compilation of stories of Chicago, and it's called Open Heart Chicago. It's an anthology of Chicago writing, and it's fabulous. And if anybody thinks that the demographics in the United States aren't changing, you got to read this book. It's like, this isn't your grandfather's Chicago. And so all these, those are great. And we had, this one isn't a memoir, but I think you knew about this one called The Blueprint. And this is a young man in the music industry who just is a primer for how to make it in the music industry today in the digital age. He tells you how to do everything from
own. You're telling me about him. Yes.
So he's on, his book is cooking, and it's, we're trying to get it into like music schools like Berkeley and things like that. So everybody has access to this, because a lot of times, you know, artists don't really know about the business part of their, of their art.
No, but most of the time, artists are usually concerned about the talent part, because they think that that's the most important thing. And it's not that it's not important. It just has to coexist with the business part of it, because the business has, you know, the corporate structure has come into our business far more than it did 50 or 75 years ago. And
right.
You have to understand what that is. Now, I have to say this now because you're not going to believe me, but we're less than like 12 minutes away before we have to be gone.
Oh, okay. Oh, my gosh, I can't believe it.
I know,
okay.
Because, you know, I have to count in the saying goodbye and talking about the guests next week and everything like that. So I want to make sure we have several callers here, and I want to make sure if anyone is interested in asking you a question that we give them time to do it. We only have about 10
okay.
minutes for them to do that.
Okay.
But, you know, I just want to give them the opportunity. I'm sure that they're listening to the story, but I told you how fast it goes. And,
it does.
Yeah.
I do want to tell you about two more books. Can I quickly tell you about two more books that
All
are
right.
very dear to my heart? Please. Okay.
Yes.
One is called Inside Out by Marilyn Rivera, and she's a fabulous talent. She's a recovering addict and a felon, and she just was so honest about her memoirs and how she grew up in New York, in Brooklyn, in the Bronx, and she was in the Army, and she just had this whole journey, and now she's ready to pass the baton. So this book is like it's courageous, and so I was so proud of this book, Inside Out, Journey Through the Looking Glass. And the other one is The Mime Speaks by Nate the Mime. He's become a very good friend of mine. And
he's
just great. And his book is The Mime Speaks. And actually, this book has been his calling cards for getting other gigs, and he's getting out there. And so I'm very proud of that book as well. So these people are family to me now. So.
Well, and I think that's another aspect that people don't really understand when you see. On network television, people who are there to promote their books, you don't get a feeling that they're in a networking of family. You get the feeling that they're in a part of an industry and they're just going to, you know, print those books out and it's all about, you know, that almighty dollar. Well, it is always about the almighty dollar, but there are communities of artists that along with making the money, we create families. And support
yeah.
one another. And I think that's a whole another aspect of the arts that people don't realize. And because we have a lot in common, our struggle to be successful, our love of the arts, our insecurities, our craziness, you know, I mean,
yes.
all of it. Because you got to be crazy in order to be in the arts. Nobody is insane, you know, wants to be in the arts. But that is one of the evidences that really that comes across when one delves into it. And these are things that are never explored. You know, we are in a community that most people don't realize still that it exists. It really is a community of people. And we have our different factions. There are the actors who don't sing, and then there are actors who do sing. And then, you know, then you have writers
yeah.
and, you know, then you have costumers. Everybody has their own factions, but
yes.
when it comes down to it, we are all there to promote one another to make sure everybody is in the best of position that they can be in. So I'm glad that you brought that to the forefront. Now,
okay.
I want to, before we leave out of here, because we only have a good about 5-6 minutes left, tell me,
okay.
where do you want to go from now? Where do you see yourself in 5 years? What do you think?
Well, I'm trying to get all of these properties, get them into some kind of dramatic shape. I mean, that's my goal, is to get them all. I mean, I'm making some inroads on two of my own properties, but you know, all these books, most of them I've chosen because they do have drama to them, and they would make a good television series or a good movie. So that's what I'm working on now. And I do have some, you know, now I have some contacts out in LA, so it's a little easier. I have a manager out there. So, you know, I'm trying to, that's my goal, is to get
yeah.
everybody, all of my authors, get them more exposure, get them out there.
Yeah. Well, that's a business goal for you, for your company, because you're building somewhat of an empire for yourself, which is really wonderful. I mean, because that's something that really wasn't heard of years ago, but you are a woman who is doing all of this, supplemented by the support of your husband, which, and Paul is absolutely wonderful about that. But you're creating that. What personally would you like to see happen for you? Your book's a success. Do you want to stay in Bethlehem? Are you thinking about traveling when things open up? Do you think you want to, do you have another aspect of the arts that you want to explore? What do you think?
I think I want to, I'm into another novel now. So I think I want to pursue that because at this point in my life, I'm good at it. I don't want to start on something else. So, and there's so much now to explore. I thought I would never write another novel, but, you know, there's so much to explore, you know, or we're so divided right now. And so this novel I'm writing is called Fly Girl, and it's really about choices. You know, it's a young girl in a tornado, which we're now experiencing because of climate change, which is one theme. And the other one is she has to say she's babysitting two twins, you know, little girls, and she has to save one. It's kind of like a Sophie's Choice. And which one does she choose to save and the ramifications of that on her life and everybody else's life?
Well, I think one of the things that we didn't talk about was your playwriting. You know, I mean, I know I mean, I know you as a playwright as well as a publisher because of, and you're very good at it. You know, I'd needless to say, I would like you to pursue that also. I thought Lois's Wedding and how you dealt with fracking and all of that, which is very, very prominent here in Pennsylvania and other parts of the country, was amazing.
And you did a great job directing it, by the way. You brought it to life. It was fabulous.
Thank you. Thank you. It was a pleasure. It was, you know, I mean, it really was. Once you really got the visual of what you were trying to do, and we did it with such wonderful talent, you know, the talent and the percussion talent and all of those things, I think it really deserves another opportunity to be seen. But along with that, I would love for you to write something else, a play about something else to explore. Because I think you have that talent. So I will encourage you to do that. I will.
Well, thank you. Yes.
You know.
Maybe Fly Girl would make a good play.
It might. It just might. You know, I mean, it sounds like there are a lot of different levels and degrees to explore. And that's the whole thing with a lot of the plays that were not happening, which is why I started directing, is I just wasn't seeing any depth of character. They weren't three-dimensional. They were just flat. And, you know, you dress the same way to represent one character all the time. So that was boring, you know, more than anything else. But now I want to let the audience know that after this, we are going to do the video after show afterthoughts, and we're going to continue our conversation a little bit here this evening. I don't want to tire her out because, you know, I know that she's been working all day like all of us, but I just do want to, you know, to finish, and the audience always likes to see who they've been listening to for an hour. So we'll do that on Zoom in a few minutes. We'll take a little break and then we'll gather up and do that on Zoom. And then next week we have a common friend that is appearing here, and that's our friend, Mr. Bruce Boyer, who is the fashion. I can't call him a fashionista. I have to fashionor.
No. He's a.
He's a fashion critic. Wonderful in style. You know, the one thing that if there was one word that he would probably destroy, it would be trendy. You know, he's always devoted to the classics. You know, and when you see him, he's always so impeccably dressed. So he will be on here next week. And after that, one of my good friends, David Gaines, who was the Phantom on Broadway and in Los Angeles, will be on. So, you know, all of those things are coming up after we do it. But if as we wind down, let me ask you just one question. All of the facets that you talked about, we didn't get a chance to talk about any of your siblings or your parents, and I usually like to do that because that tells me about it. But who do you think Bathsheba Monk is? Who is Bathsheba Monk?
Is this for me? Is you're asking me this question?
Yes, I'm asking you.
I think I'm an interpreter of life. That's what I think. I think that I don't think my own story is so interesting, which is why I never really talk about myself. But I find everybody else's stories incredibly interesting, and I think that my gift is showing other people's stories to the world, whether it's in my own fiction or helping them write their books or whatever. That's who I am.
But this last hour has shown you that your stories are not boring at all. I mean, people have just, you know, they're all lined up here and on the station, and no one is asking questions because they're listening to, you know, what you've done in your life. One faction of your life after another, being in Bethlehem and being, you know, a young person and being aggressive enough to be thrown out of things to later come back into those areas of the art, and then to explore the world, to want to get up and get out and explore the world, and then to be sensitive enough to find happiness in a relationship with someone who brings you back here and allows you to develop yourself again. I think I think you do have a story. You know, now I'm going to do to you what you did to me. I think that you do have a wonderful story, and I'm thinking maybe it's a film, and I wonder who would play you. I mean, who would you want to play you in a film, you know? Michelle Pfeiffer.
Oh.
Michelle Pfeiffer, somebody like that.
I always made a joke about that. Christopher Walken.
Oh, please, okay.
Well, just because he cracked me up, that's all. Meryl Streep, of course. Who else can play me?
Yes. Meryl, yes. Everyone wants Meryl. Meryl would be the perfect choice. Well, with that said, I'm going to wind down now. I want to thank everybody for the board. It's filled with calls, and I want to thank you all. You've been quiet tonight, but thank you all for listening. And I hope that those people who didn't get a chance to listen to this tonight call up blogtalkradio.com /S&Sam, F is in Fred, T is in Tom, H is in Harry, and 2, and hear this and other episodes. So with that, I'm going to bid you all adieu for this evening. Lenny Godfrey, Straight No Chaser, has been an absolute delight with my wonderful guest, Bathsheba Monk. Thank you so much, Bathsheba, for stopping
by. Thank you,
Lenny,
for having me. Good night.
Yes. And I hope you come back again. All right.
All right.
We'll see you next week, everyone, with Bruce Boyer. Talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
This is something we all know. Fever isn't such a new thing. Fever started long ago. Never know how much I love you. You never know how much I care. When you put your arms around me, I get a feeling that's too hard to bear. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold hold me tight, fever. In the morning, fever all through the night. Listen to me, baby, hear every word I say. No one can love you the way I do, 'cause they don't know how to love you far away. You give me fever. When you kiss me, fever, when you hold me tight, fever.